blessing to my heart. Psalm chapter 39, I hope that you found your place there. And as we said this morning, just remain seated because of the format of the things that we are doing. I have learned that the times of our lives, the things that we've been studying in these times of our lives, they have gotten deep and involved. And I've had to split some of these things up as a result of it, but I do want to cover all of it, okay? Because I do believe that it is important. We may even have to do that next week. It just depends. We will see how the Lord leads, because as we get into the next, and if you read further in verse number 8, you're going to see some interesting times that Solomon speaks of that are quite intriguing. Right here in Psalm chapter 39, let me read this verse of Scripture, and I'll try to briefly pull this together. I've only got one final thought to share with you this evening. But I want you to look again, if you would, at Psalm 39 and verse number 5. You can remain seated because of the layout here. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Selah, Solomon, David, the writer right here, says. Now, flip with me, if you would, to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. And so to bring all of this together, we have got to remember that David is the writer in Psalm 39. Who was David? David was the father of Solomon. Solomon is the writer of Ecclesiastes, David's son. And so we read in verse number 1 of Ecclesiastes 1, here right here, Solomon says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. David's gone. Solomon is now king, as David is dead, passed on. Solomon is now king. He's been king for his lifetime, just about. He's an older man, and in verse number 2, he speaks a bit of his testimony. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And we spoke this morning about how that you can see the similarities between the writings of David, the king of Jerusalem, in Psalm 39, as he speaks of vanity. And we can see the similarity of it in his son Solomon, as he spoke in Ecclesiastes 1, speaking of vanity. Here was something, no doubt, that Solomon, a boy, read in the writings of David, a dad. And he was reading, no doubt, one day the Bible, as he sat down under divine inspiration, and he was trying to pin the story of his life, by which you find much of Ecclesiastes to be. And all the way through the end of the book, you learn how he deals with this matter of vanity. He closes out this book, if you flip to the final verse in the final chapter, dealing again with the same topic of vanity as he's at the end of his life. And I told you this morning, I picture Solomon sitting at a dark desk somewhere in his latter years, a shell of the great man he once was, pen in hand, next to his little lantern. Without a doubt, he was reading through the Old Testament books. He came across Psalm 39. He read his daddy's writing. I believe it's entirely possible that it was through that that God inspired him to write the words of Ecclesiastes, verse number 2, chapter 1, that we just read. It was building to the third chapter, where he comes to chapter number 3, and he begins to deal with the times of our lives of which we've been studying. Verses 1 through 7, we dealt with all these various times of our lives. And when we came to verse number 7, the last part, we read these words, a time to keep silent and a time to speak. Now that is profound, because you can see how it all ties together, as we learned this morning, of what David said in Psalm 39. And what Solomon says here, and you can see how Solomon the son had been reading the writings of David, the dad. And so now we read where we'll pull this time of our life again and remind us. I hope you'll look at it with me in verse number 1. We're back in Psalm 39, and David is writing. He says, I said, I will take heed to my ways. Why? So thy sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle. He's going to muzzle it while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace even from good. And my sorrow was stirred. Verse number 3 says, my heart was hot within me while I was musing. The fire burned. Now, here's the words I want us to pick up on for this final thought we'll share tonight, and it should not be long. Then spake I with my tongue. Then spake I with my tongue. Verse 4, he deals with a matter. In verse 5, he deals with a matter. We'll discuss it in just a moment. But by way of introduction this morning, this evening, I just want to remind you of what we talked about this morning. I shared, first of all, and considered some thoughts with you about the struggle of silence. Friends, if there's one thing that we're all on level ground with, you and I both struggle with being silent. We want to speak our mind. We want to get involved in hot topics. We want to talk about controversial things. We want to share our opinion sometimes about a bunch of stuff that's none of our business. Sometimes about a bunch of stuff that we're not qualified to talk about. Sometimes about a bunch of stuff that's going to do nothing but cause division and hurt in other people's lives. That's just how we are. Sometimes it's just hard for us to keep silent about these hot button issues. We talked about some of those issues that, you know, things that other people do that just aggravate us. That family drama sometimes, goodness, it just aggravates us, doesn't it? Something today that just is really all over us is politics. This COVID matter is something that five will break out in a hurry over COVID issues these days. Any other hot topic item. And we are learning in the Word of God, David struggled with keeping his mouth shut. He had a hard time with silence in it. And we considered three things having to do with the struggle of silence. There was the intensity of silence. And we learned that from verse number 1, how this was one of the weaknesses of the mighty King David. He had a hard time bridling his tongue, whether it was his power, his possessions, or his position that he held. He had a hard time keeping his mouth shut, and he was going to say things from time to time that was controversial, and so he battled with it, and he said, I am having to have a fight right now, and when I did speak, I was saying the wrong things. He knew that this was a struggle for him, and so as Solomon was reading this later on in his life, he was learning as well that his dad struggled with this stuff. As a matter of fact, before Solomon struggled with wickedness in his own life and the weakness of his life with pagan women, he fell to Canaanite gods and such things. Solomon wrote these words in Proverbs 29:11. He said, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterward. And what he is saying right here is somebody who just speaks their mind. You remember how we talked about that this morning? Somebody who just speaks their mind and they say, it doesn't matter. I'm one of these guys. Remember that bombastic personality that people have? It's sometimes an issue that they want to have that reputation of being the one who just shoots you straight. I'm going to tell you how it is. I don't care whether it hurts you or not. I'm going to speak my mind to you. Solomon, point blank from the Word of God, calls that individual a fool. Why? You can't trust your mind in your flesh. You can't trust your heart in your flesh. I have always struggled with people who say, I'm going to shoot you straight. I'm going to tell you just like it is. And those are lessons I've had to learn the hard way through my life. And I'm still trying to learn right now because I've created so much trouble in my life. Because sometimes I've made a fool out of myself. And I've said words that I should not have said. And he deals right here with the intensity of silence. And he's saying, I really struggle with this. And remember this, ladies and gentlemen. If you ever have the idea that I'm going to say it just like it is, remember that. What appears to be like it is to you may not be like it is to somebody else. It may not be reality. Always remember there is so much more to every situation of life than what you and I can see. We think we've got the answer. We think that we hold the moral high ground, but many times we don't, and you don't know what you do till you are in their situation, and the best thing to do is to remain silent. There's an intense struggle that comes with that, the intensity of silence. And then how we talked about as well that there was the integrity of silence. The intensity of silence is important because it directly affects the integrity of silence. Later on in verse number 1, he talks about this, and simply I'll say this. If you don't control your mouth, and you let your mind control your mouth without being led by the Spirit of God, it does bring your integrity for God into question. And in doing so, it brings the integrity of God Himself into question. And you must be very, very careful about how that you do that. But then we also learned in this struggle of silence that David not only had the intensity and the integrity of silence, but there was the inaccuracy of silence. And how he said in verse number 1, he said, I was dumb with silence. The word dumb, tongue-tied, is what it is talking about there. I was tongue-tied with silence. I held my peace even from good. David got so confused about when the right time was to speak and the wrong time was to speak. I mean, he got so tongue-tied on it all, he kept his mouth shut when he should not have been silent, and he should have opened his mouth, and he spoke of the good things of God, but instead of speaking about the good things of God, he just stayed silent anyway. He was a mess. He was a mess. And there was the intensity of the struggle that he had, the struggle of silence. Secondly, we also see right here that there was the season of searching, don't we? The season of searching that was given to us. And in this season of searching, it is here that we learn what goes on in the heart and the life of a man, an individual. When it comes to this matter of being silent, when do I speak? How do I prepare myself to speak? And we learned about the pain of suffering. And verse 2 taught us a little bit about the pain of suffering. David was confused. He didn't know what to say or how to say it. And there was pain. It says right here, my heart was hot within me. We talked about that hot, that burning, that inner vexation that he had, and how sometimes we get so confused and we torment ourselves, and how that word is actually speaking hot right here. It is actually speaking of that inflaming that is within ourselves. We overanalyze everything. We scrutinize everything, and we beat ourselves up over words. Have you ever done that? Haven't you? You've said something. You've laid awake all night and you thought, man, I shouldn't have said that. Or you battle within your mind and you're thinking, goodness gracious, I want to say this, but I don't want to say it. There is the pain of searching when I should not be silent and when I should speak. Remember, it's so remarkable how David, he deals with silence, he deals with speaking, but he bridges it all together with the searching, and how we ought to have searching in between the silence and the speaking, or else we're going to make a mess out of everything. The pain of searching, the process of searching. Just because it hurts doesn't mean you don't go through the process. He says, I was musing. The fire burned. Remember that word hot? The fire burned within me. And it is speaking right here. It is the picture of a volcano that is there. And it is musing on the inside of David. And remember how he was holding the cap on the volcano, because at any moment, his words, that volcano on the inside of him could erupt. And I shared a personal story of my own. And I battle this, and you battle it as well. You're having conversations with people, that tough topic, that surprising, stressful situation you were not prepared for. You're given an opportunity to speak about something that may be controversial. You got to pause, folks. You got to muse over that. You got to mull over it. You got to think about it. And me and my own flesh, I have to keep that cap on, because if I don't, I know what the volcano within me is capable of doing. It will erupt and it will hurt people, and it is not worth the price that comes with just satisfying your flesh by telling somebody how it really is. And we close this morning by talking about this matter of silence is such a bigger deal in the supernatural world than what we really think, and how there's a battle of right and wrong, good and evil, righteousness and evil that is going on within you. In your mind, there's pain, there's process that is involved with it all. So when it comes to this truth about our words, of the process and the pain, and when should we remain silent? How do we go through this searching process? We've learned that today. Let's consider the third thought tonight as we make this application. Not only is there the struggle of silence, the season of searching, but think with me now about the strategy of speaking. Aren't you thankful that David not only tells us about silence, he not only tells us about searching, but I'm grateful to God, Brother Richie, that he doesn't leave me right there. He went on writing and he told me about a strategy that I needed to take in my own life to know how that I need to speak and when I need to speak and how I need to be careful about how that I speak. So when it comes to this matter of the struggle of silence and the searching, the season of searching, think with me now about this strategy of speaking and how there must be the filter of speech. Write that down. There is the filter of speech. We move now, of course, into verse number 3. Then spake I with my tongue. Now, everything else that's brought us to the point where we are has all been about the silence and has all been about the searching. But now we see that he is speaking with his tongue. Now, you remember, God never intended us to be a mute, right? We learned that in our first thought tonight. This morning about the inaccuracy of silence that we have, how God does intend us to break our silence and to speak about some truth, to say what truth really is. He doesn't expect a Christian to walk around all the time in silence. The gospel would never go forth. There are things that are good that God's people need to talk about. I notice the little word then that is used in verse number 3. You see it, then spake I with my tongue. You know what he's saying right here with this word then? David is letting us know that he has been through the struggle of silence. He has been through the season of searching. He has fought that battle being silent. He got confused in that battle. He really has. But then he went through the process of searching for what he needed to say and the process that is involved and the pain that goes with it. And he's been through those two steps. And now when he says then, he's saying it is now time for me to speak. But when we talk right here about the filter of this speech, notice how he speaks and notice who he speaks to first. Verse number 4 tells us, do you see it? He said, Lord. Now keep it in mind, right here in the first few verses, he's already talked about the struggle with his silence. And then he's gone through the season of searching. And now it's time to talk. And he says, Lord, who's he talking to? He is directing his words to God. Do you see that? There is a filter that is given to us. It is Jehovah God. You see, when faced with that hot topic, that confusing or that stressful, that surprising situation, that opportunity to break his silence and to open his mouth, he did not run and start speaking to his wife, did David? He didn't hop on his iPhone and go and call a buddy and start laying it all out to him. He certainly didn't hop on social media and start typing out his heart, typing out his mind, bearing his whole heart and world. He didn't do any of that. No, what David did is before he did any of those other things, he took his words, did David, straight to God himself. David filtered his words through the Lord Jehovah God. Here's why. Because he knew that if they would have passed the test of God, then they're going to pass the test of man. And if they did not pass the test of man, but they did pass the test with God, then David didn't need to worry about man because he passed the test with God. And you just let the chips fall with the words that you're about to say if they pass the test with God. And so what David is actually saying here is before I say a word, I'm going to talk to God about it. He's saying, I'm going to say to God what I was about to say to this individual. I'm going to filter it and process it through him. Look further at verse number 4. He says, Lord, make me to know mine end. What a profound statement. Now the words of verse number 4, boy, I wish I could really get into the making. Well, I have to glaze over it here, this making his end. But the ultimate thing that David is saying right here is David wanted to know some things. How many of you today would love to know some things about your life? Know exactly where you're at and what you're dealing with in your life. And David wanted to know some things about his life, part of which was he wanted to know what his ultimate situation really was. He wanted to understand everything that he is facing. There's not a one of us here this evening that does not want to understand the things that we are facing. Dear God, why am I having to go through this situation in my life? Why am I having to fight this battle? Why am I in such a mess right now? God, you've convicted me about my words. You've convicted me about these things that are wrong. I'm trying to make it right. It just doesn't seem like anything's getting any better. Dear God, why does things have to be this way here with me now? And so David is laying it out. He's saying, I want to know my end. I want to understand my situation. He is saying, Lord, I am now, as a result of this, filtering my words through you. In other words, if I am going to speak, dear God, give me the words to say. God, take out of my sentence, out of my phrase, out of my paragraph, what you would not want to be said. I'm filtering it through you. Take all the bad out and then put everything in my words back together at the end of it. I'm filtering it through you. What do you want me to say? What do you not want me to say? I have gotten to the point that I talk to myself a lot. Y'all do that? I do. I'm riding down the road. I'm just a-talking to myself. I'm sitting around the house. I was sitting back here a few minutes ago, and you know, I'm just a-talking to myself. I'm talking through everything. As a matter of fact, if you all were to see me or hear me in my private moments, you would think that is one messed up dude. Dude, right there. That's one messed up man right there. All he does is talk to himself. All of my sermons get preached two or three times to my office wall before they ever make it to you. My office wall, I don't have a good invitation. There's not much good response during the invitation, no good altar call or anything. But I tell you what, my wall in my office has got more religion than anybody else has. I preach these sermons to these walls as I am going through them. Now, when it comes to silence and when it comes to searching, perhaps it should be part of our talking to ourselves strategy. Not a bad thing, talking to yourself, to include God in your conversation. Just you and God, to start running all of your speech by God before you ever even say it. Start running it by God. Something maybe a little bit like this. Maybe a situation you're faced with in your life. And maybe you have to say, Lord, this person doesn't have the sense of a brain-dead billy goat, and they are driving me absolutely nuts, and I just want to speak my mind to them. Father, is it okay if I get right in their face and say, you are the most idiotic person that has ever lived? Oh, Lord, I want to. Would you please be glorified with that? Or maybe it's another situation. Maybe this family drama that you're dealing with. And you say, Lord, this family drama that I'm dealing with right now over this event that I'm having here at my house, Thanksgiving dinner, I can't get the right person to bring the pumpkin pie. I can't get the right person to bring the green bean casserole. Father, it's just a battle on the group text that I'm sending out to the family. And Lord, how my family members raise their kids, I just can't stand it. And God, I'm asking you right now, would you please let me tell them after Thanksgiving dinner how fed up I am with them and get in the face of my sibling or my cousin and say you are the worst parent that has ever lived. Oh God, that would feel so good. Would you please, Lord, let me do that. I'm running it by you to find your will. I'm waiting for you to give me the green light in that. Or here's one for you. Oh, Lord, this guy's opinion on COVID is just making me so mad. I mean, I am just fed up with it right now. I can't stand it anymore. Father, would it be okay if I get in his face and tell him that he needs to get his head out of the sand in darkness and see the light of day the way that I've seen it? Oh, God, let me do that. It would feel so good. I just want to let him know what I really feel about it. Oh, Lord, here's another one we can think about. Oh, Lord, this conversation on politics right now, it's about to cause me to punch this guy in the face. Lord, I'm asking you, would you please let me just give him a five-finger greeting right now so I can silence him? Would you please let me get in his face and say that I think every one of them politicians in Washington ought to be carried out to the National Mall and on worldwide television? I think they all need to be horsewhipped. Oh, God, would you let me please, oh Lord, would you let me say that to them? I understand that it sounds crazy right now. But you would be amazed at the amount of trouble we would save ourselves if we would stop in that moment and pause when we're faced with that difficult topic, when we're faced with that difficult situation, that stressful moment that surprised us, we weren't prepared for, and we're getting confronted with something we really didn't want to know. And we filtered our words through God. And we said, Lord, before I say these words, I'm running them through you. And we will be amazed that when we do that, how much the Holy Ghost of God will speak to our hearts and let us know how demeaning they sound, how hateful our words are really going to be, how evil it is coming out of us. Anything that makes our flesh feel good in our words is likely not of God. Anything that makes our flesh feel good in our words or anything is likely not of God. And so therefore, when we come to this matter of the strategy of speech, we've got to come to the point where we filter all of our words through God. You've got this matter right here of the struggle with silence, the season of searching. The strategy of speech must be filtered, a filtered strategy. But remember this, there is also the finality of speech as well. The finality of speech. You've got to filter your words to the Lord, but you've got to remember, you can't take His word back. You better establish a strategy in your heart now. That once they're out, you can't take them back. Boy, I've been in opportunities, many situations before, I bet you have, where I've had that struggle with silence, that season of searching. But I lost the battle with the season of searching. And the strategy of speech did not come out right. Before I thought about it, the words were out there. And as they rolled off of my tongue, out of my mouth, they probably got no further than this right here. They were going out at 1,000 miles an hour, and here I was chasing them. Oh, no, come back here. Come back here. I don't want those words to get out. It's too late. Part of our strategy of speech had better be filtering our words and understanding the finality of it. You never know who's listening to you. You never know who somebody might be right around the corner. You never know how that those words are going to hurt somebody that you never in a million years wanted to hurt. And it better be a strategy in the beginning as we go through this process of making sure we know they're final. The words are gone. Would you look at the scripture with me in verse number 4? Look at what David says right here. He says, Lord, make me to know mine end. And the measure of my days, what it is that I may know, look at this statement, how frail I am. Oh, what a phrase in God's Word. And here's our text verse from the very beginning. We've been on a journey today, haven't we? And right here we bring it all back full circle. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Vanity. Selah, he says. David was really wanting to know how much longer he was going to have to live. He was really wanting to know, ultimately, how much longer he was going to have to put up with all of this mess, much of which he himself had created. God, how much longer am I going to have to do this? How much longer am I going to have to fight these battles? But the principle that we need to see right now this evening is that David, as he was coming near the end of his road of life, and he knew that his speech had always been one of his weaknesses, his words. And David regretted. As he's coming near the end of his life. The way you see is this. The way to speak is with the understanding that your words are going to stick with somebody else forever. You're never going to get them out of their minds. And so before we speak, remember that what's going to be planted in our strategy, what's going to be planted in their brain, that here's it will be there forever. And it'll just be a good gift of God if they ever forget it. But it has the potential to be there forever. In his final years, David was saying, "Lord, help me, I pray thee, to watch my words. Say only what you want. When you want. Where you want. How, oh God, you want." This was a burden on David's heart, because you can look at it and you can see that David knew he was saying, "Dear God, I know one day my boy Solomon is going to read my words. He's going to read my life. And there's nothing I'm going to be able to do to change it then. Oh God, help me with my silence, with my searching, and with my speech, that I say not the wrong thing." Much of the Bible is a mystery to us. Did you know that? There's a lot of things we just don't know. I really wanted to share this with you at some point today, or during the series. Today, it's amazing how God pulled it together. Simply because this is one of the stories and thoughts in the Bible that God does give us an answer to. And he makes it clear. David is saying, "One day my boy is going to hear." And it's not that he didn't give us a record, God, that his boy did hear. His boy did hear it. And we see that clearly. Solomon did hear about the words of his dad. But even for old Solomon, it was too late. Did you get that? Because he wrote, "To everything there is a season, a time to keep silent and a time to speak." As he wrote that, he himself was an old man. An old man. And even Solomon, the offspring of David, was still looking back and living with the same regrets that his father lived. Oh, the trouble that Solomon could have saved himself if he would have just listened to the wisdom of his dad. And he would have heeded his dad's words. Solomon didn't do it. Solomon pursued the gratification of his very own flesh. David was saying, "Son, you're going to read my story one day, and I'm telling you right now the recipe to find success. There has to be silence. There has to be searching. And then you can speak." But Solomon didn't do it. And Solomon, as his dad, as an old man, is saying to the rest of us right now, "Listen to me. Don't come to the end of your days, your deathbed, and say, 'Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. All is vanity.'" May we not make the same mistake. May you and I use the times of our lives today to filter all of our words. May we have silence until we search. And then the strategy, may we filter all of our words through God before they come out of our mouths. And may we know that they are, will never take them back. And the people that hear them will hurt them. You filter them through God. It'll save us from saying the wrong thing. And then if we say it through the Spirit of God, we'll be amazed at how the person who has to hear it will melt under the love that you and I show in our lives. Miss Mickey's coming on to the piano right now. I close with this question, and I want you to think about it. How many people today, think about it, how many people today are still hurting because of something that you said to them years ago? How many people today are still hurting because of something that you said to them years ago? I wonder tonight how many of us may just need to find somebody and wrap our arm around them. Maybe in this building, I don't know. I'm not aware of any. But maybe somebody, a family member that's not even here, maybe a neighbor, maybe a friend, you need to look them up. Maybe you need to go get them on the phone and you need to say, look, Bob made a mess out of it, like David did, like Solomon did, but I'm not going to leave it that way. I'm going to change it. I'm going to make it right. I'm not going to mess this up. Don't let somebody hurt the rest of their lives. Do the best you can to fix it while you still can. David couldn't fix it with Solomon. It's too late. Solomon's children would read what Solomon said. They read the vanity book. Today's the day that we can learn and not be like the rest of them. Stand to your feet with me. Heads are bowed, eyes are closed.